handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. And with the sound of my voice, there goes the clickety-clacking of my dog, Cookie, because when she hears me speak, she assumes that I have friends and neighbors and people visiting. And every time I open my mouth, she assumes a party's about to begin and she needs to start clicking, clacking, and barking. But nope, it's just the podcast, Cookie Bear, so don't you worry. Hello, everybody. It is 2:51 p.m. on July 27th in the year of our Lord, 2020. I've been saying Eastern Standard Time, and a bunch of people have been tweeting at me, don't you mean Eastern Daylight Time or whatever? And I was like, no, I don't. Now, I just looked that up. This is a distinction I've never known. I don't particularly care. But I looked it up, and apparently in the spring and summer. So you're correct, nitpicking people annoying me. You are correct, so I'm not telling you you're wrong. You're wrong to bother me, but you are not factually incorrect. So apparently spring and summer, it's Eastern Daylight Time or whatever, and then fall and winter, it's Eastern Standard Time. I don't give a shit. Like, I don't even understand why that's a distinction or a thing, but okay. So I'm just not going to say it at all. How about that? You have to wonder what time zone I'm in from now on when I say the time. So when you listen to this, I hope it tortures you and you're wondering, but is he in California? Is he in London? Is he in Australia? 2:50 p.m.? Where? I don't know his name. That is my limited Jeff Bridges from the very underrated and awesome film Arlington Road. I strongly recommend that movie. It is so awesome. And in this age of rising white supremacy, or more comfortable white supremacy, maybe it's been rising, but now it's very comfortable and at home in the Trump America. Go rent Arlington Road. Tim Robbins and Jeff Bridges. This is Jeff Bridges right after Big Lebowski. Tim Robbins a couple of years before he wins an Oscar for Mystic River. It is such a gosh darn great film. I love that movie. I own it. If we weren't social distancing, I would lend it to the person who lives closest to me that listens to this podcast. Would that be Darren? I'm not going to say his last name, but probably Darren, who is a comedian and a listener of this podcast. But Arlington Road. So the movie begins. He finds some little white kid in the middle of a suburban street, bloodied ass hand, like a fireworks, what we believe is a fireworks accident. And a frantic Jeff Bridges picks up the kid, puts him in his car, speeds off. It's like a great opening to a movie because Jeff Bridges conveys such a panicked urgency. And he comes into the hospital. He's like, doctor. And then, see, it's much like my Tom Hanks impression that I can only say like one line as Tom Hanks. Caparzo. that's Tom Hanks from Saving Private Ryan, and it sounds perfect to me. Ask me to say anything else as Tom Hanks, and the impression falls apart. That's right before Vin Diesel gets shot for not wearing his helmet, I believe, in Saving Private Ryan. By the way, Vin Diesel, how in God's name did you get yourself into that movie? That is just, what an outlier. Caparzow! And then, so in Arlington Road, you know, the kid's being taken away by the doctors, and the nurse is like, sir, what is the child's name? And he's like in a fog, so he's not quite paying attention, and she keeps saying it. And then he looks at her and goes, I don't know his name. And then they cut to the credits, and now try watching the movie and not laughing. You'll just be waiting for that first line, like 90 seconds into the movie, and you'll laugh, and then you'll turn it off. But it's actually a really, really, it's one of those late 90s movies that kind of slips through the cracks, but it is awesome. So Arlington Road, there you go. There's two weird, random one-line impressions, and we're off to the races, folks. A couple of things to talk about today. Nothing too big. Cookie's deliberating whether to lick her butt right now, and she decided not to, for any of you keeping track at home. I'm excited that sports are back, although it seems baseball is going to be canceled soon. I hope the NBA stays safe. Though the Jazz, I was hoping the Jazz could steal like a sneaky title this year. But Bojan Bogdanović, their second best player, is out with after wrist surgery. And with his 20 points a game and excellent distance shooting, it's going to hurt the team. So whatever we end up doing, it's not going to end in a championship. I don't see the Jazz being good enough to lose their second best offensive player and still win, even a cheap, quick championship like this one. So sports are back. I miss movies very much. I don't know. I don't get to watch too much. I don't get to play games because all I'm doing now is legal work, answering emails, setting up meetings, creating some content, and being super stressed and, trying to squeeze in some reading. This weekend, I read on my couch. Girlfriend worked this weekend, so I had the apartment to myself, and I just sat on my couch with the AC running, opened up the window for a little light, and just sat there and read for an hour each day. And I have not read a book. I read the paper every day. I read at least a couple articles in the New Yorker each week. But I have not read a book in almost 4 months because that was just sort of my commuting thing. And on the weekends, I would, get a tea at a Starbucks. I just like to read in different locations than my apartment. And now, more than ever, it's like I want to do something outside of my apartment. But it was nice to just kick back and read a book. I didn't read the whole book, but I'm making my way through it now. I'm excited. Rick Perlstein's book, Reaganland, comes out in August. That's a must get for me. I've made these book recommendations before on my blog and maybe on this podcast, but Rick Perlstein, who's definitely more of a lefty than I am, but Nixonland is sort of the most acclaimed of his quadrilogy. What's a four part instead of a trilogy? What's the four part version of that? A quartology? I don't know its name. Caparzow. So, guys, this is why I have to do the podcast during like late lunch breaks from the workday, because at least I bring a little more energy. Yes, sure, it's bordering on mental insanity, but still, I think it's better than when I do it at like 10:30 and I'm just, lamenting all that's wrong in the world of politics, comedy, and health. But first brain fart of the episode. We were reading. I want to get out of my apartment and there's nothing to do. Haven't played a game. I have a bunch of video games I'd like to play. Just can't find the time to do it. And cause games, the way games are now, I don't have any current sports games. So it's like, they're all big adventure games and those things you have to put like 2 to 3 hours blocks aside, and then you have to play it consistently so you don't sort of forget the controllers. Cause once it becomes familiar, then you can like really zip through a game. But if you do what I did, which is play Spider-Man for like 3 weeks, a year ago, And now I'm just going to restart the game because I'm like, I don't know. I know I stopped at a boss and I don't know any of the controls anymore. So there's that. But basically, it's, yeah, I'm very frustrated. Forget, you know, comedy struggles or not being able to get this or that. And this is where I sympathize with you common listeners, okay? I'm not just a, you know, a comedy icon. I'm also just a regular person. And, God, I would like to just sit in a restaurant and then go see a movie and eat some pancakes at IHOP on a Sunday evening. You know, basically my best case scenario for life is like the end of Million Dollar Baby for Clint Eastwood. That's the trajectory my life is on. Like, I'm happy if I'm all alone and depressed eating key lime pie at a diner. I don't know his name. Please just do me the favor and watch Arlington Road so we can laugh about this next week. That's your homework, righteous prick listeners. Go watch the movie Arlington Road. It's so good. I swear you will really enjoy that movie. It's a, and why is that? Looks like the computer froze. Oh, for Christ's sakes. Now it's going to tell me there was a skip. Hey, guys, technology is not my friend. So I really have one big thing to talk about this week. Update on my career. I'm getting a lot of political voiceover work. Exactly where I thought I'd be in comedy 17 years in. Getting at, like, it's all good. Good money. Good opportunity. But goddamn, I need... it's just, it's, you know, I'm in that delicate place of like, how do I avoid not being pigeonholed? Like, I've done, people always say the Trump, you're one trick pony. And then I'm like, I've slipped in 10 other impressions in the course of the last 4 months into just those Trump videos. And almost all of them widely praised. You know, I just did a Pence video on his own. So I'm trying to like slip in, and then I try to promote my albums every couple of weeks, like my stand-up albums, but nobody really cares. And I wrote, my newest blog is up. I posted that yesterday, but it's basically about the comedy police coming for me, and I realize the comedy police don't actually like comedy. That's sort of, that's why it's so weird, is that you have people dictating, like, I you read the blog. I want to bore you with it. This isn't going to be the audiobook version of the blog, but just read the blog for some more perspective on comedy. But the difficulty in terms of attracting a large fan base. You know, because I'm not a gimmick. I'm a real comedian. Now, you may find me, but there's this split of like, you hope that enough people who like you because of your Trump impression also like broader comedy, and plenty do, which is awesome. But many others are just like, I didn't like that joke. It's like, you haven't liked a single one of my jokes. Like, I can tell jokes mocking, like making fun of Trump for being friends with Jeff Epstein, and they'll be making pedophile jokes, and they'll go, oh, that was so funny. And then I make a joke where I say, Lane Bryant filed for bankruptcy, which is true. And I said, Lane Bryant has filed chapter 12 to 24 bank for bankruptcy. And many, many people were condemning that. Take that down. Like, I love the take that down. And it's like, who are you? You're just somebody with a shitty sense of humor that's easily triggered. And I don't mean that word in a condescending way. I mean, like, there's examples in the blog that where it's just like, oh, by simply having a plus size store in the joke, it's offensive to you. Oh, just by having a black woman in the joke is offensive, even though the joke is really not offensive or insulting to black women per se. You know, things like that. I had a joke about trans people once that had nothing to do with trans people. I mentioned trans people. I'll tell you this. This is the one joke I'll tell you, and then I'm going to get off this, and you should go read the blog. So, two homework assignments, class. Go get Arlington Road on demand. And it's really good. I promise you, it's a really good movie. And I mean, Jeff Bridges and Tim Robbins, like at the height of sort of their acting powers and fame almost. And then read the blog. Bless you, Cookie. Cookie just sneezed. I left a show, and I'm sorry if I've told you this story. Maybe if you're listening to this, you haven't heard the story, but I told this story before. I did a joke where I said, I was talking about the Ted Bundy documentary and like movie on Netflix, and I felt like there's too much Ted Bundy content. In fact, there's too much white male serial killer content out there. It's 2019. This is when I'm telling the joke. It's 2019. Can we move past white male serial killers? Are there no serial killers of color that we could cover? Are there no trans serial killers that sort of need to be highlighted and represented? And a woman came up to me after the show and she's like, you were so funny, but can I make one suggestion? She was real nice about it. And she just said, I would leave trans people alone because they have a tough time. Now, her heart was in the right place and she was not rude with her comments. So I was like, oh, I don't feel, I just kind of said, oh, I understand the sensitivity there. I wasn't really trying to make them the joke of it, but I was nice because she was nice. But in my head, I was like, no, man, like you don't get like you. There's too many people that maybe like comedy is cool. It's cheap. It's easily accessible. It's everywhere. Everybody's trying to be funny, but it's, at this point, oh, for fuck's sake, what in the fuck just happened to this? Man, this is such bullshit. Sorry if I don't know what, like the audio on my computer is total fucking bullshit right now. I you know, you pay for a new hard drive and you're getting fucking 2002 technology, so I don't know how much of me cursing you heard, but my dog has left the room because she always leaves when I say the word fuck. She doesn't respond to her own name, but when I say fuck, she usually comes to me for soothing, to be like an emotional support, thinking that I'm about to throw something at her, I guess, which is probably her previous life. And then she walks away into another room and says, I'm going to let him chill out. We have a real abusive spouse relationship, me and my dog, except there's really no abuse. She was abused by somebody else, and now she acts like I'm Pauly from the Rocky movies. Anyway, I don't know what got cut off there, but there have been drop-offs throughout this bullshit. The program sucks. My computer sucks. Life sucks. See, imagine this happened to me at fucking midnight tonight. The suicide note of a podcast that would emerge from that would have not been pleasant for any of us. Oh, so you probably missed some of that story, but the point was, too many people, I don't think, are comedy fans. I think they want to be comedy fans, and they like jokes on the internet, or they like tweets, or they like little viral videos, so they go to comedy clubs, or they listen to comedians, or read the stuff of comedians, and then not only just say, oh, I don't like that, and move on, but they then have this entitlement to be like, that is not funny. I would take that down. And it's like, well, you're not me. You're never coming to a show, so I have no reason to listen to you when it comes to like judging humor. Sure, there are offensive things and line-pushing things, of course, but, and I'm not saying fans shouldn't have input, but it's one of these things. It's not the, oh, I unfollowed, or I don't like that joke, so I'll only listen to his Trump stuff. It becomes this, I want to shape your work because I didn't like it. And they'll say it about like a tweet that's like, has 2,000 fucking retweets, and they'll go, this is not funny. Take it down. And I'm like, it seems like not a lot of people agree with you. And also, who said you get to tell me what, like, you didn't like a joke? And they're never really on point. They're always people who are triggered and trying to be heroes, it feels like. And don't get me wrong, there are jokes that are offensive, but or push the boundaries, or statements by comedians that aren't even really jokes that are offensive. But it's like these jokes that I posted, and you'll see them in the blog, were very relatively benign. Like I was going more for like late night monologue jokes. Like I wasn't even trying to be like, look at what the fuck I just wrote, bro. These were like, hey, I know I have sensitive fans and old women who are progressive and white saviors following me because they hate Trump. So I'll keep it pretty toned down. And, you know, but in my recent tweet that I just posted before starting this, I refer to Melania as a hoe because she's gardening. No condemnation of that one. Not a bit. And it's just one of those things where you're like, you know, you sort of say, well, I mean, do we care about women, or do we care about women when they make you look like a hero? That kind of thing. And be careful. I don't want to veer into sort of bro territory where I'm like some libertarian douchebag who's always just going, comedy's gotta be comedy. If I want to say the N-word and urinate on you, it's called freedom of speech, bro. You know, I don't want that. I don't need to be in that camp. But also, you know, the flip side is, yeah, some of you progressive folks thinking you can dictate comedy because you're either easily set off or don't know comedy, or that's not your space. You know, maybe shut up a little bit. That would be my advice. So there's that. Oh, and yes, by the time you listen to this podcast, most likely, I am going to be on Tuesday's Adam Carolla show. For all those people who've been wondering why I haven't been on Carolla for so long and who first discovered me on Carolla, let's download that episode. I almost got out of the episode without him making some kind of snide comment about Black Lives Matter, but just at the end, as I was signing off Zoom, he said he dropped one. It was fun. It was in promotion of the Trump podcast and Trump album. And I say this again, Carolla, I differ greatly with him on, God damn this fucking computer. I differ greatly from him on many issues and many subjects, but politics being the main one, race relations, I still think he's a super funny guy. And I still think he, you know, it's a tough line to cross because I feel like I don't like, obviously, many of the guests he has on. He's got, you know, the Ben Shapiro, Milo Yiannopoulos sort of contingent. Now, I know he is sort of a free speech person. I think Carolla lives that. You may disagree with him. I do think he lives that. I'll listen to both sides. I may yell at one side more, but I do respect that. And I think he's really funny. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I am obviously a sucker for funny. I give a wider latitude to funny. That's something that I like a lot and allows me to forgive certain things. It's like next to being a member in my family, if you're super funny, I will try to find a way to rationalize for you. Now his fans became more and more rabid and angry and sort of alt-righty and Trumpy, which I didn't like. And it didn't feel like that was a fan base I needed to cultivate or gain or gather from. But, you know, I like the guys on the show. It was an opportunity to do the show, be the guest and promote some stuff I'm promoting. And it was a fun episode. I'm not going to lie. This sounds like I'm apologizing, which I am a little bit because I didn't like the direction he had sort of veered in politically. But when I'm the guest, I got to make fun of Trump and Jeff Epstein a lot. So at least I got to do my thing and not be signed. So for those of you who discovered me on Carolla, I am on Tuesday's Carolla. I'm the guest on Tuesday's Carolla. And, you know, it was fun. It was a live show in Dallas that I was zoomed into. So that felt very, very high tech and cool. We had some very good improv with me as the president, Carolla going back and forth. So, you know, that is one of the places that elevated me. It's probably, you know, it's the black guy, ironically, it's the black guy who tips, and then Carolla, and then the Lebatard show. And in terms of gaining followers on Twitter before I gained a huge following. So, you know, that is a black, white, and Latin coalition that kept me afloat until I could finally go viral during a pandemic. But that's something to check out tomorrow. So it was good. It was fun being on, even though I do vehemently disagree with his politics. I do think he has a lot of good thoughts on everyday life, but not when it comes to race and taxes. So check that out, I guess. Now, before I talk about my mother, my dear old mom, two things. I realized segments that I had been doing on the old incarnation of this podcast that I then, you know, just let fall by the wayside. Why not bring them back? That's what I think. And those two segments I'm talking about are where I read from the High Point Herald, which was inspired by my brother. See, I was a fame whore from a young age. My brother, this is background for people who don't know. And once again, I apologize if this podcast has dropped off. I'm having issues with this program. You know, why wouldn't it? After 10 years and a new hard drive, why wouldn't it be worse than ever? You know, this is like version 29 of the program and my, you know, brand new hard drive. So, of course, it's constantly fucking up. But my brother hanging in our room growing up was an article from when he was 8 years old. So I was like, you know, one. And he was in the Riverdale Press, which is our local newspaper. And he had written an article for a little local paper that he wrote out stories, interviewed people as like an 8 or 10, maybe he was 10. No, he was 10. And I would have been 3, I believe. So he was 10. And it was called the Kingsbridge Press. And, you know, sold it for like 10 cents or a nickel. And he wrote the articles, interviewed people. And then did like a, it was funny. It was one of the quotes was from Joe's Pizza. He reviewed our local pizza shop, and it was like, the pizza is very tasty, and Joe is a nice fellow. I remember that quote. But that article hung in our room. You know, my mom framed it, and then for my brother's, I want to say college graduation, might have been high school or college graduation, my uncle got that article. Like, I don't know the term for it, but basically on silver, like a plaque. He got like plaque, like so that the article was imprinted into like a permanent sort of, it's beautiful, beautiful sort of gift. But from that young age, seeing that article, I was like, I'm going to do a paper in my building, you know, just because it looked cool. Now, I never got the star-studded coverage because I was a fucking copycat, and print media was already dying when I started the High Point Herald in 1990. But yeah, it was the same process. My mom would print it out after work at her office, and I had like, you know, subscribers. I had like 25 subscribers in the building, and it was just a goofy little kid thing. But we put decent work into it. Me and my friend Ian, I was the driving force behind it, but he helped out. So I have some movie reviews. I figured I'd read, and I hope I didn't read these before, but this is from Volume 1, Issue 5, August 30th, 1990. I was already a movie buff, and I wrote, here are two of the reviews. My Blue Heaven. This was out of a 4-star rating system, folks. My Blue Heaven, 3.25 stars. In this movie, a gangster, Steve Martin, is going to testify against the mob. Rick Moranis is the federal agent looking after Martin. While being hunted, even at that age, I didn't care who the fuck people's names were. I just referred to them as the actor. While being hunted by mafia hitmen, Martin teaches Moranis a few things, like how to dress, silk suits, how to dance, etc. Quite funny in some parts. That's it. These were very to the point reviews. I feel like that review doesn't really, I think I probably saw that some critics liked this movie, and it feels more like I wanted to give My Blue Heaven 2.5 stars at the time, but I think critics were praising it, so I was like, I got to give it a 3 or more. Men at Work, 3.5 stars, folks. And this one, I feel like I laughed so hard at this one, I probably could have given it 4 stars. I still remember that. This movie is about a man who is dumping toxic chemicals into the ocean. No, it's not about that. That's just the first scene in the movie. One of his coworkers believes it is wrong and gets him on tape saying stuff like where he dumps his chemicals. The coworker gets killed, thrown into a barrel, and accidentally dropped onto the street. Now, I've just spent 66% of the review talking about the setup in the first 90 seconds of the movie, as if it's the driving force of the plot. Now we get to the main part. Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez are the two garbage men who find the body in the barrel. Their hilarious adventures make this one of the best comedies of the year. There you go, folks. And I believe Men at Work is currently available on Amazon Prime. I almost watched it. That's where I got introduced to Keith David, who
has a great voice. He did some Ken Burns documentaries. Cameron Diaz's stepdad in There's Something About Mary. So he was in that as their boss, and he was funny as fuck in that movie. I loved that movie when I saw it, but at 11 years old, you realize how bad a movie has to be when you're 11 years old for you to hate the movie? It's got to be pretty bad. So there are your movie reviews. That was one segment I was doing. And then let's talk a segment that I know a lot of people miss. Moment of Dane. This is where I would read, Moment of Dane is where I would read Instagram posts by comedian Dane Cook. Okay? Comedian Dane Cook. He writes very profound Instagram posts sometimes. And I thought I'd bring that back as a little time filler and something to just make us chuckle. So here's a Dane Cook post on Instagram, your Moment of Dane from June 6th, D-Day. He didn't say that, but hey, Dane Cook, D-Day. It's the picture is him. It's a tweet. He took a screenshot of a tweet. The tweet says, can I just take a moment? Oh, I have to read it like Dane Cook. I forgot. Can I just take a moment to state the obvious? This all just beautiful to witness and participate in. So a typo. We can change the world. We can lift each other higher. I'm optimistic and proud of each and every person I see and meet. That is all. feeling the love of hope. Okay, dude. So here's what his comment was, which is a lot longer. This is a complicated planet with a history of stunning shifts, exceptional achievements, deplorable evil, and marvelous good. It's had its share of unquestionable inhumanity, its hand in astonishing accomplishment. Very alliterative. We are a world of the same hearts beating, minds dreaming, lives sharing, and once it's our time to pass, we mourn, remember, and miss the same. We all want to leave this world with the notion of our energy lasting beyond into infinity and sharing that journey of love together, further, forever. It doesn't matter what your religious or non-religious beliefs are. We all wonder. We are in a rare defining moment on this speck of colorful geography, one that gives us all a chance for the for the future us to look back and appreciate that humanity wanted to move itself closer together to learn from the mistakes of our past. When we understand pain we caused, it's an understanding we pass on to our children. They then know it's not worth causing pain. It only hurts your own heart. Forgiveness is powerful. Sharing is powerful. Equality is powerful. Unity is powerful. Stay mindful. Stay thoughtful. Stay compassionate. Stay caring. Stay collaborative. There it is, guys. There's your moment of Dane. I got to say, when I read that, I just sort of say, don't ever move to Los Angeles, people. That's a Boston comic talking like that. Don't ever move to L.A. because you will just start to soak in that sun and that new age energy, and all of a sudden you will post things like that. There is your moment of Dane. Okay, so that's it, guys. I just no, I'm kidding. That was all preamble. Just a few moments to talk about my mother, who retired this week. Her final day of work. She's 76 years old. She went to work. Here's a little story about my mom. At 9 years old, she lost her mother, who passed away. Infection during what is now very routine surgery, gallbladder surgery. I remember that because that was my mom had her gallbladder removed, and I went to the hospital with my father. Maybe I was in high school, I want to say. And she was, maybe I was a little younger, and she was very upset. And it was a routine surgery, and my dad told me, no, that's how her mother passed away. So it's making her very nervous. So she loses her mother at 9. She goes to work at 17. My mom, very smart, very book, very, very big reader. But my diagnosis is that when she, you know, lost her mother, and of course the program seems to not be picking up again. When she lost her mother, she basically said, I need to go out there and, you know, I need to go out there and work. I need to put this in my own hands. I need to be in control of what I'm doing. And this is really frustrating. I apologize if this episode is messed up, either because I'm messing it up or because the program's messing it up. But I think we may have to take a couple weeks off from Righteous Prick, because this is unacceptable to have this happening. So I'm going to wait a second until it says it's responding. But this is real Bush League shit, so I apologize. So, yeah, I think the podcast is just skipping out on tons of stuff, which is very disheartening. Wow. This is a total waste of time if it's skipping all this stuff. So, waiting. It says not responding. There's no reason why it wouldn't be responding. I'm about to bash my computer into pieces. This is a real disgrace. Oh, it is. Hey, look at that. It looked like it is picking up. So now I just sound like a mental patient. I think that picked all of that up. but I apologize once again. If the program is picking me up, that's great. You're hearing all my talk back to the computer. But it keeps telling me it's not picking up. So once again, if the program is recording properly, it's me that's messing it up. But I just want you to understand why. So anyway, my mom goes to work at 17. My dime store psychology thought on that is she wanted to work and take care of herself as soon as possible. She didn't want to prolong earning and by going to college. But she always was a reader. And then she lost her older sister when she was 21. So at that point, then it was just her dad, my uncle, who was her younger brother, and her. And her father passed away in 1977, I believe. So I never met either of my grandparents. But that was the year that she started working at her company that she just quote unquote retired from yesterday. So I always joke that her job was her middle child. She had my brother in 72. She started working at her company in 77, and she had me in 79. She took 5 months off of work when she had my brother. She took 3 weeks off from work when she had me, which might explain my desperate need for attention all these years as a comedian. But anyway, this isn't about me. But the point is, she's been working 58 plus years. August 1st would mark 43 full years with the company. And, you know, I always feared that she would die at her desk because work meant so much to her and was such a driving force in her life. Because I think the best compliment I can give my mom, it's not the best description that I could say is, it's as if she took life as if she was, you know, a fullback. And me and my brother were the tailback. This is a football analogy, but basically, her job was to clear a path for us, not to enjoy herself, which unfortunately, you know, for many years, she took great pride and enjoyment in us graduating good school. She put us through private school. For people who don't, you know, and a lot of people, when I wrote this on Twitter, I just said she retired and everybody's offering condolences. I'm like, she retired from a job, not from life. The tweet was, you know, 22 words. Was it that tough to get through all 22 words to realize she had retired and not died? But she put us through private school. I was a little more spoiled than my brother for reasons of she was in a better place financially. We were in a better place financially. But I didn't want to make it sound like she was a single mom. My dad was there the whole time. He was older. His employment was a little spottier than my mom's, but he was there. He was basically... when he was not at work, he was stay-at-home dad, cook for me, pick me up from school. And when he was at work, he was working. So, but she was the main breadwinner. And her example, you know, the example she set was, if there could be a Michael Jordan of moms, I would say my mom is that. And I mean that in all the good and the bad. You know, she was the punch Steve Kerr in the face, if that's what it took to win. when it came to pushing my brother and me forward. But, you know, years in private school, like I said, I was a little more spoiled by my mom because we were in a better financial situation. But also, we both had rich friends. And I was never going to drive a Range Rover to school or anything like that. But I, you know, if I wanted the $120 Nike sneakers, I could get them. Because she knew that we didn't have the Park Avenue apartment or the Bronxville mansion. But I was going to go to school wearing, you know, nice clothes. And my end of the bargain was to kick ass in classes and do my work and be a good kid. And that was, that was all good. And, I went to Williams College in Georgetown Law, propelled largely by her. My brother went to, Northwestern University, Medill School of Journalism. Was the interesting fact, they were just talking this past year about the third ever black editor-in-chief of the Daily Northwestern. And my mom said to my brother, were you the first biracial editor-in-chief? He said, no, I'm known as the first black editor-in-chief. And my mom was like, but you're biracial. And that's for another episode, folks. But like I've always joked, my brother looks just like me if I was put in the black oven for 5 more minutes. And then I tell the crowd jokingly, hey, Trump supporters, that's just a metaphor, not a real thing. But kinkier hair, broader nose, a couple freckles. But other than that, we look just alike. I'm like the slightly more passing version of my brother. But the point is, she put us through all this education because for her, I don't know if it ever bothered her that she didn't go to college. I don't think she regrets the choices she's made in terms of her work ethic. It worked out for her. She made a very good salary. She has a great pension, all on a high school diploma. And it stresses me out sometimes because I think my brother, who is a, senior editor at ProPublica, was an editor at the New York Times, an accomplished journalist throughout his career. My brother is the journalism equivalent. You know, he doesn't have a Pulitzer Prize or anything yet, so he's not maybe he doesn't have that championship ring. But he has the Patrick Ewing journalism career, basically. You know, editor of his high school paper, editor of the newspaper at one of the top 2 to 3 journalism schools in the country. Worked at Miami Herald, Washington Post, New York Times, ProPublica. So he's got a stellar resume. You know, so just like somebody like Patrick Ewing, top high school player, top college player, college champion, NBA All-Star, not an NBA champion yet. So hopefully whatever my brother wants out of his career, I hope he gets, because he's very hard. He's 1B in the hardest working people I know. My mom is 1A and my brother is 1B. But her legacy, she was the offensive line. She was the fullback, just opening up holes for us. She used to joke about it, but like when I'm wearing $120 Nike sneakers that I can't afford because I don't have a job, she was wearing, Caldor brand shoes to work. She never stopped sacrificing, and sometimes I felt like she didn't have any other mode other than sacrifice, because to her, I think losing her mom so young made her, she took that on herself and said, not only am I going to be around for my kids, not that a health hospital incident is no one's fault except maybe medical professionals or the Lord, but I think she just thought, I'm going to be a dominant mother. And I don't mean that necessarily in the bad way that it sounds, but in terms of my kids are going to have everything that I can possibly provide for them. They're always going to come first. I think that can sometimes make someone maybe not the easiest partner to be with, but it made our lives a lot easier, with those being her driving goals and the reason why she would go to work late. She took pride in her work, but she took pride in what her work provided. And, I'm glad that she is now done with work, because, it just seemed like she would never allow herself to have full enjoyment like that. That mode couldn't be turned off. Mamba mentality. That's what I'm going to call this episode. Mamba mentality, but I'm going to spell it M-O-M-B-A. But what's disappointing about this is she was basically, it was not a voluntary retirement. I think it's the best for her, but I think it was done in a way with a company saying, she was a high salary person. She's 76. Totally makes sense for her to retire, but she hadn't. I think she'd earned, it was the kind of thing where she earned her choice. I think it should have been her choice. And she got a generous package and everything, generous severance and everything. But it's the principle of the thing. And for me, I don't want to say it confirms my cynicism about the world, but it's one of those things where you think to yourself, do we really respect and reward a good job anymore? Do we really, or do we just, is it all bottom line? Is it all bullshit? It was very frustrating, because I felt like it was a good thing for my mom, because I think she needed to be done with work and take a well-earned rest. But it took me longer to get on my feet and not live month to month than it did for my brother. He was always the more responsible person, and I put myself first. Maybe that comes from being the spoiled baby of the family. But
Cookie, stop.
You think to yourself, like, that's how it ends, like, not on your terms. Willie Mays struggling in the outfield for the Mets is how it ends. No, but beyond that, I think it's a good thing for my mom. And, one of the things that I've said, I've told this story before, I think, but my college basketball career was very disappointing for me. I got off to a slow start. I entered college very still growing, still filling out. I was a skinny, lanky kid with, who'd come from a very substandard program compared to some of my teammates. And so I played JV my freshman year. I sat the bench junior, sophomore year, just happy to be on varsity. And then junior year was the year I felt like I turned it around. I came in shape. I was like, finally, I was like 20 and fucking jacked. And my skills were there, and I could shoot the rock. And I was practicing. In practice, our B team, the reserves, we probably won the scrimmages, the practice scrimmages, I'd say 55 to 60% of the time. We had this horse named Drew DeMuth, who was he a freshman at the time or a sophomore? Was he? No, he was a sophomore when I was a senior. So he would have been a freshman. Or was that my senior? No, that was my junior year. And Drew DeMuth was just you couldn't keep him off the glass. He was this broad, lanky dude, but he didn't have a lot of the fast twitch fiber. He's not an explosive leaper, but had like a marathon stamina. Anyway, we had a lot of like veterans who were kind of pissed at their careers and a couple of young dudes who really could just bring the effort. And we ended up probably winning like 60%, 55 to 60. We won a majority of like end of games to 10 or whatever, but we ended up winning this. A lot of the time it would be like, I'd be banging out threes on like fade out. Anyway, slightly more athletic Bill Laimbeer game, I think, my junior year. But I never really got much time. And then by my senior year, I started getting more time. I still thought I should have gotten more, but I was getting more time and I was productive. I was a solid defensive player. But my career stats, as I've said often, basically looked like the week of a really good player. my 3-year varsity stats total look like a player of the week stat line. Over the course of these 3 games, he averaged 32 points a game, 12 rebounds, and shot 92% from the foul line. Wait, what? That was his entire career? Yikes. But my last game, my mom and uncle, my dad came up to games once in a while, but my mom and uncle came up to more games. But my dad would come, not because he gave a shit about basketball. He'd be like, yeah, I'd like to see Jean-Louis. That's right. He used my full Haitian government name. But for this last game, I took this defiant bullshit stand where I was like, Mom, Uncle John, you don't have to fucking come up for this shit to see me what? Get some bullshit senior send-off when I've been like, you know, not getting the time I thought. I've been behind the whole time and never caught up. Don't waste the trip. I don't need you to see me sit the bench and get some token minutes again. Well, of course, I had my one highlight of my entire career with like a minute left in my entire college career with all seniors on the court. I caught an N1 dunk on a dude. And I remember my friend Manny, who I think listens to this podcast still. I remember I caught it and he just yelled out, dunk that shit. He was standing at the foul line. And unfortunately, I got it in like an awkward spot because if I'd gotten it off the correct foot, I could have really hammered this home. But it was an awkward jump. But I was fit and athletic at the time, so I was able to still get up and rise up over this dude getting N1 off the wrong step. Manny was pumped. My whole teammates were pumped. And my then girlfriend was in the stands just looking at me and she had a smile on her face, but she was shaking her head. And it was basically, I'm going to have to hear about this shit for at least a week kind of smile. And she was right. But she was the only person there, you know, I'd say that I loved that was at the game. My family was not present. And I remember feeling so pissed that I'd let my pride stop them from seeing a highlight of mine after they'd seen me sit the fucking bench for so many games. So for me, it's a weird goal to have, and I'm making my mom's retirement about me. But the fact is, without her helping me from a very young age to, you know, into my 30s, in any time I was in need of help, when the career wasn't going well or the money had run dry, it pisses me off. Like right now, all I want is for my uncle. My dad can't. He passed away. But I'd like for my uncle and my mother to see me really fucking succeed at comedy. Because I feel like that's my last chance for. And yes, my mom is the type of mom who'd say, "What do you mean? What do you mean? You've succeeded. You've done very good things with your life. I'd like to see you get married, but other than that, you know, that's the kind of thing she'll say because she doesn't. She takes pride, even if it's me being self-deprecating. It's me attacking one of the two things she cares most about in the world. So she doesn't like even if it's me being honest with myself or disappointed in myself. She can be disappointed in me, not that she is, but she never wants to hear anybody, including me, be disappointed in me because it reflects on her work, her efforts, her love. And that's the way she sees it. So it's like, but what I would really like to see is just, you know, while they're retired and still here, I'd like to fucking really blow up, because it's the thing I've worked my ass off on. And I know it's a crapshoot and nothing's guaranteed in this business, but I don't have another choice. I'm not going to make partner at a law firm. I'm not going to be a judge. I'm not going to be a senator unless I go that Al Franken route of like celebrity into politics. But I'm still in a place where maybe the thing I've worked hard at and that she's seen me put my effort into, can see that succeed. That would be nice. That's what I would like. I knock on wood, don't think she's in any health danger or anything. I'm just saying, but you know, 76 and every day is, not to sound too trite, but every day is a blessing. So, I hope that I can't pay her back for the 58 years of work she put in, the 43 years at that company, the late nights, the weekend work, the shitty clothing she wore so I could wear more fashionable clothing, the cabs she let me take when it was raining, when she would be walking back from the bus. Not the same trip, obviously. I wouldn't be like, I'll see you at home. I'm talking just in general, the pampering versus the way she sacrificed. It'd be nice to, if there's no chance of, there's no chance of paying her back, but it'd be nice to reach new levels of reward is what I would say. And the best way, and probably the only way at this point, you know, I can't buy my mom a house because my NBA hoop dreams ended probably around the age of 16. But I can still get on TV and have a nice life and make her feel like what she invested in me paid off. Yes, it paid off. I keep saying this. Yes. No mother thing, you know, she's proud and she's happy, but you know what I mean? I don't want consolation prize proud where it's like, I'm just happy my son is happy and healthy and he's met a nice person and he's got a dog and a nice apartment and he lives near his brother and that's all well and good. No, I'd still want that where she can be like, anybody who doubted my son was wasting his time with comedy, you know, hype man telling off all the haters level happy. That's what I want my mom to have now that she's retired. So yeah, that's it for this week. So I felt I just needed to say that. You don't get to often quasi eulogize your parents. You know what I mean? In a nice way where it's not too late. And a retirement from a lifetime of hard work and sacrifice is one of those times where you get to say something real nice. So thank you, Mom. I know you probably listen to like 4 episodes a year. This probably won't be one of them, but thank you, Mom. And hopefully you can relax. That's what we are worried about, that though, the idea of how do you relax when for 58 years you've been, you know, Russell Westbrooking in terms of your attitude towards work and life. So hopefully she can. Hopefully she, you know, finds some hobbies when the fucking coronavirus is gone in 2029. And on that note, folks, thank you for listening. You've gotten a lot of recommendations. You've gotten the behind the scenes where it was still recording, where I'm cursing at my machinery for doing stupid things. So I apologize if there were a bunch of drop-offs. Hopefully not too many, but it's a real piece of shit machine. So on that note, thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe. Check out my YouTube channels, /JLCAUVIN/TrumpTheInternet. Check out Making Podcasts Great Again, the runaway hit podcast of 2020. And I will see you next Tuesday.